Hi, it's Rick Barraza. Welcome to the second video in our quick start series on migrating from Windows Phone to Windows 8. This video focuses on handling data, particularly the async await patterns introduced in Windows 8. If you've never worked with them, this video is for you. So we're going to be looking at code. Again, this is code that we've taken from the Viewer for Khan Academy app developed by Joel Martinez, available off of GitHub. And you can look at the first quick start series if you need to download the source code and follow along on this video. Asynchronous data is one of the important brand new patterns that have been introduced in Windows 8. The two keywords async and await were introduced in C# 5.0. And if you look at any of the templates, you look at any of the proper samples on Windows 8, you'll see them all over the place. So it might be a new thing for a lot of developers, even well-seasoned developers, because it's a relatively new feature. And now you're finding it all over the place. So let's take a look at it and how it's implemented in our application. And you can follow along again if you download the source code. So we've already seen the first part of async await when we looked at the app.xaml CS in our first quick start series. But we went over it very, very quickly. So now we get to talk at a more ready pace on what all this stuff actually means to us as Windows 8 developers. So if you recall, app.xaml is the first entry point for all applications, and the system calls this launch app. And you'll notice right off the bat that even this system call is using the async qualifier up here. Now, the reason it's doing that is because there are tasks inside of this function that are going to need to handle asynchronous calls of some form or another. Now, the most common ones in our application are dealing with these I/O data requests we're calling out to the Khan Academy servers. But in this case, when we first launch the app, we're trying to create an app-level data source that we'll be passing in through our frames as we navigate around pages. So we're creating our data source, NewCon data source, but we're going to need it to load all data. Since this is going to take time, we're going to need to qualify it with an await command. You'll start to see the interaction here. Whenever a function is calling an await command, it usually will be qualified with an async command. So let's jump right in to see exactly what's going on this load all data command and why it requires an await command. So in this case, our data source has been our con data source. You'll find this off of the common folder, or excuse me, the data model folder, the con data source. Con data source itself is made up of a lot of subclasses, but let's go straight to this guy and check it out. Con data source comes in. Here we have our public sealed class con data source, and again the function that we are calling is load all data. So let's again look at how we called it: await data source load all data, and the function itself. So this comes in, it's public, of course. It also is qualified with an async task, load all data. The way our application works is when we're saying load all data, Khan Academy, the viewer for Khan Academy, is doing two different things. First, the very first time it runs, it pulls down all the data cached from the servers. Now, we do this so that the interaction is very fast and fluid, right? But that data that exists up on the cloud may constantly be getting updated. So when we say load all data, we're going to be doing two things. We're going to be loading locally cached data, as well as then also making requests up to the server to update that locally cached data and refresh. So when we call load all data, it's spawning off to another thread called load cached data first, and then it is checking to make sure that we have network connectivity, and then calling load remote data. So let's look at how load remote data works. And we'll see this kind of nesting again and again and again. App.xaml CS, again, needed to call await till this function was done. This function defined itself as an async task coming in. This function then needs to call subsequent async function. So here load remote data calls in. Load remote data is going to be async. Load remote data comes in, and here's a very straightforward way in Windows 8, WinRT, to load up data from a server. First, we create an HTTP client. In many cases, you'll need to set a max response content buffer size if you are going to be bringing in a sizable amount of content. And then once we have our client, our HTTP client, we create a response, and then we see the first chain. This response needs to await our HTTP client actually retrieving, getting this, doing the get async on the URL that we'll be hitting, in this case, the khanacademy.org API, bringing in the topic tree. So once this happens, we know, so it gets into here. By the second line, we know that this response will have already come back with this. In this case, once we get a response, remember, we're pulling stuff in from the cloud and then overwriting our local cache. So once we get the response, we then need to wait for the response to write locally what its content was. Now, you'll notice here we start getting into a more complex scenario where this command, write local cache, itself is going to await, and yet what it is writing needs to wait until we're guaranteed that the response content has been read in as a string async. So I know we're kind of jumping straight in here, but working how this async and await work with each other, the setting up tasks and then eventually coming down, there are many scenarios where you basically have to wait for the inner section to be complete before the outer section can be complete. And that's exactly what we're seeing here. We have our client. We have to wait till it initially gets its information. We want to override that information, but that request needs to wait until the content has been read in as a string. So it's only a couple lines of code, but those lines of code are definitely interdependent on each other, and making sure that while we're handling these requests asynchronously, that the commands are stacked properly in terms of how they're going to be awaiting each other. Once this once the web response has come in with the most recent data and we have overwritten our local cache, at that point, we then reload our data for our data source off of our local cache. So this basically overwrites our local cache, and then once again we call load cache data to refresh the data source and update all of those bindings. So let's start jumping into that next section next. But here's the async await pattern. Again, you'll see this all over Windows 8 applications, especially when you're dealing with I/O code. So let's not forget here that we know, in this case, we know what that data is looking like from Khan Academy. When we called everything out, we saw it here. We know this URL. If we hit this URL and we see that they are returning a tremendous amount of JSON data, but by analyzing this data, we know what the shape of that data is that's coming in. Sometimes you know it and sometimes you don't. In this case, since we do know what the shape of the data is, and it's pretty consistent, we were able to go ahead and create a class, a JSON node class, that basically represents that shape of the JSON nodes that are coming in. So we can have that special class set up that way. Now with these two things in place then, let's see how everything plays back and forth. So if you recall, we called the load all data. Eventually we did the remote data call to the servers, which came in calling that exact same URL that we saw. So this response, we wrote the entire thing as a string to our local cache, and then we're calling load cache data. So if we come up here, we see load cache data is using that JSON node class that we defined. And it's one line of code at this point. The JSON node, you want it returned cached. We're doing an await read local cache async, passing in the type. So let's go to this read local cache async to see what that's doing. So again, we have JSON node coming in as our type that we're calling in here. Read local cache async comes in. It has this JSON node type, handles a couple more asynchronous commands to read in the local cache into the result, and then there we go. Sorry, I was looking up the one. Read local cache comes in with JSON node. Then we go ahead. We have the file. We do the IO read text async file. Comes into a serializer. We pop that into a mem stream, reading in the memory stream as a type JSON node, and then returning the serialized results. So we're doing the async await, bringing in the data as a text string, storing that text string locally, but at this point when it's time to read it in, we're passing in the text string of JSON data, passing in a JSON node that maps the shape of the data, and by using these features now in here, we're able to serialize it back out and get properly formatted JSON data that we can then use to do our data binding and store in our data source. So at this point, we've gotten in unsorted JSON data from the const servers, dumped the whole thing into a string file, loaded it back up and serialized it as JSON. So if we look back at what we've done, once we've read local cache, it's come back in as a JSON object. At that point, the only thing left to do is populate our groups. So let's go there and see what's happening. And something to explain here is the content that we're coming in are coming in as a collection of playlists. If you recall on the phone, all these playlists were treated as equal. And yet the data within that playlist does actually say, here's a higher level group I belong to. I belong to this one or that one. So with Windows 8 for our app, we didn't want to just give a ton of playlists mixing in math and science and humanities all together. We wanted to be able to separate them out into logical groups of playlists. Or in this case, we're calling the groups topics. So that's exactly what's going on here on populated groups. That the string, which we turned into JSON objects, is getting sent to populated groups. The first part of this code goes ahead and starts pulling out based on if they're videos, if they're topics. And then here we use the magic of link to come in and start selecting many and start grouping things in dynamically where it's a topic, we flatten them out, and then we start creating these sub-items to create playlists. Basically, the structure we're trying to map, the structure we're creating here, looks like this. Let me zoom in on this. So we have, at the core, we have video items, and this is made up of a data item, the generic class that we're using, which has things such as URLs, colors, descriptions, names. So we have a video item, which represents an actual video. These are stored in playlists, and these playlists are grouped up in topics. So for our application, an example would be math is a very high-level topic. We have around 6 or 7 topics that Khan Academy exposes, things such as math, science, humanities. So these would be our topic levels. Every topic, let's say math, has a collection of playlists. In our case, these playlists might be algebra versus geometry versus statistics. Once you go into a playlist, that playlist is made up of videos within that topic, right? An introduction to algebra, et cetera, et cetera. So this is the format that we want to present to the user. And so we took all that raw data that came in from Khan Academy. We stored it locally as string. Once again, we then loaded it back up as properly formatted JSON, but as unsorted JSON. And now under our populate groups, we're using link to start grouping those high-level topics together of the videos. And once that's all done, we start creating our playlists of those videos. And then for every playlist within those playlists, we're going sure and making sure that we're loading the proper videos to this source code. Populating the data. And in this way, if we run the application, we'll see that now represented in here. What came in as a lot of random playlists, and again, here are the playlists of videos, we're able to logically group up into playlists, and those playlists logically group up into topics. So that when we zoom out, we can see the topic level up here, and every topic has a collection of playlists, and every playlist has a collection of videos associated with it. So it's this type of high-level group to item, or high-level group or collection to playlists, to playlists of videos, that we needed to add one extra level for our Khan Academy. Many of the samples out there simply have it as a two-tier system, right? You have a group, and that group has a collection of videos. Since this content, we're dealing with so many videos, we can't just go straight from playlist to video. We need to go topic to playlist to video. So that extra level, if you needed to figure out how for your application, it's in there in our code. So easy for you to see in that level. Dive down into the code. If you have questions, go ahead and ask them here or on the forums. But in this way, the async await pattern for Windows 8 development, it really is a new thing. Hopefully by going through the code, you'll be able to see how these two kind of work together. There's a lot of samples in there for loading data both locally as well as going out to the cloud. How we specifically implemented our JSON nodes to bring in that data properly formatted. And once you have that properly formatted data, then go ahead and how do you structure your data source in such a way to support this data binding within groups, topics, and individual items. So that's all there in the code. Go through and feel free to go through it, download the app, and once you get a handle on that, you'll be ready for the next video.